Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Dr. Edie Dopking, founder of Quantum Leap Farm, launched in 2000. Quantum Leap Farm is an Odessa, Florida-based facility that offers an array of equestrian therapy programs. Their website notes that, quote, serve children and adults with special needs, kids with cancer, veterans, military service members, and their families. Participants in our therapy programs range from age 2 to 92, unquote. So you might be wondering, where do horses come into Quantum Leap picture? The answer is everywhere. All the services provided there, they explain, involve interaction with horses, whether in saddle or on the ground. More specifically, Quantum Leap's portfolio of possible services include therapeutic riding, hippotherapy, an umbrella term kind of covering occupational, physical, and speech therapy, equine self-assisted self-exploration, warrior mission at ease, military retreats, basic equine skills training, and family fun days. So we'll get into some of all those things when we get into our chat there with Dr. Dopking coming up in a moment. Mindful that last year, though, Quantum Leap reached the 25-year mark since Dopking founded it. I'm keenly interested in hearing her perspective on how Quantum Leap Farm has evolved and changed over that quarter century, along with some notable success stories. Clearly, Dopking and her colleagues have helped countless people improve their lives. We'll get into much of this when I speak with Dr. Dopking here in just a moment on Talking Animals on WMNF. Coming up later on today's program, I'll speak with Laura Weiss of Florida Voices for Animals, the veteran animal advocacy organization pursuing a broad portfolio of protests, campaigns, and other projects like producing the annual Tampa Bay Veg Fest set for November 14th this year. But also coordinating a multi-day protest of the Loomis Brothers Circus engagement at Robarts Arena in Sarasota starting July 31st, and a related effort to persuade Loomis Brothers Circus to stop using the elephant Oka and other animals in their circus. A little more when I talk with Laura Weiss later in today's program. Right now, though, let's get into our conversation with Dr. Edie Dopking about the way your facility, Quantum Leap Farm, has helped heal multitudes using various equestrian therapy programs over 25-plus years. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Dr. Edie Dopking back to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Dr. Dopking.
Good morning to you, Duncan. I got to say, I really love your theme song.
I'm glad. That's great. Yeah, it's we try to make it as catchy as possible and hook as many listeners that are passing by as we can.
Well, that's bound to put a smile on a lot of faces.
For sure. And of course, you've done much the same thing. So in the nature of this conversation really suggests tracing at least some history, not just Quantum Leap Farm's history, but your own history. And we spoke on the show once before in 2012. But I think it's important to review some essential elements of that story, really, before we trot into more recent history and seeking your observations and reflections about the quarter century work at Quantum Leap Farm. So talk to me about what I recall as a lifelong passion for horses.
I think like a lot of horsemen, for me, it's almost an inexplicable thing. You know, no one else in my family really had a passion for horses. I mean, everyone loved animals. I don't know, since I could say the word, I've always been in love and fascinated by them. They satisfy a lot of human needs, physical, social, emotional, and intellectual engagement. And like many people, I'm just one of those people that really enjoys interacting with them. And as a child, my dad got me a horse when I was 11. It took a lot of begging, right? Like every Christmas, every birthday, every Valentine's Day, you know, the quintessential, can I have a pony, Dad?
Now, prior to that time, had you been riding regularly elsewhere or otherwise, or this just...
Oh, yeah, as often as I could. I had friends in the neighborhood with horses, and I grew up in Bowling Green, Kentucky, it was relatively inexpensive to have horses there. I well remember when a bale of hay was $1.25, and we're paying somewhere around $20 for a bale of Timothy alfalfa these days. Mm. And it was kind of a thing. It was like almost every little girl in the neighborhood had a horse. So I was constantly borrowing theirs and cleaning stalls to trade for rides and, you know, whatever I could do to be near them.
And did I understand you to say initially there that you were kind of the only real horse person in your family? Like, it wasn't really common across the family to be horse folks?
Yeah. I think that my grandparents by necessity were. I have a beautiful picture of my grandmother at about 11 on her horse Pearl in a side saddle in downtown Opelika, Alabama. So I don't know if it skipped a generation or
that was. Yeah. But also, isn't there that thing of girls and horses? I don't know if that's too glib or too trite at this point, but aren't, if they're given half a chance, aren't girls often enamored of horses and pretty soon they're doing what you were doing and riding whenever they can and trading out chores and whatever to get on the horse yet again?
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for all girls, obviously, but I will say a lot of my friends were those girls.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's been a book written in the last decade or so. I unfortunately, I can't remember the author's name, but it's called Made for Each Other. Mm. And the author is a biologist, and she did a study of humans interacting with different types of animals, domestic and wild. And she took levels of stress hormones and of oxytocin, the love hormone, in both the humans and the animals. And not surprisingly, when humans interact with animals, they get a big dump of oxytocin and their stress hormone levels reduce. What is surprising to me anyway is that animals experience the same thing, and no animals more so than dogs and horses. So given that, there may be some anthropological reasons why people are attracted to horses, and maybe yeah. Women in particular. I love the title, Made for Each Other.
That's great.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's a 6,000-year-old partnership.
Yeah, still going strong, too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when you think about it, we traveled the globe on horseback. We logged our forests with horses. We plowed our fields with horses. We've been to war with horses. I mean, they've been a huge part of our lives up until the last century or so. And I really think that there might be a symbiotic relationship there, and that we're missing having that connection. And I think that's why we see people connect so readily to the horses at Quantum Leap Farm.
For sure. Well, we'll obviously delve deeply into that in a moment or two. But for some reason, you were talking about the book. A question popped into my head. Were you ever scared on a horse or to get on a horse?
Certainly. I've had moments where things were kind of going sideways. I had a crazy trail riding experience. This is the craziest trail riding experience I've ever had. I was out with a group of friends on Lake Francis Preserve out, you know, near Quantum Leap Farm. And we could hear a paraglider in the distance, and I don't know if he just got curious about us or what, but he kind of came up behind us, and we were in a bit of a chute between two bay heads, and the horses didn't quite know what to make of this loud, noisy thing flying overhead, and things got a little a little scary for a few moments there, but I think he saw what was going on, that the horses were kind of, you know, having a moment, and he flew off. But luckily nobody got hurt. But I mean, you know, there's always things like that that pop up, you know, particularly on trail rides, because the environment is so uncontrolled. But you know, as a kid, I had absolutely no fear, and I'm not sure if that's being brave or just stupid.
I'm gonna go with brave.
I think my attraction to them was so great. If there was any fear there, I totally ignored it.
That's great. Well, that's and then, so what role did horses play as you grew up? You know, they got the horse. Your dad got you the horse at 11, and you obviously were already nuts about horses prior to that, and continue to be nuts, as you kind of just documented here. So, so as you got older and kind of went off to school, what role did horses play at that point?
So, you know, I think my experiences with horses during that period of time were kind of foundational for wanting to start Quantum Leap Farm. We had some troubles in our family, as many families do. And my place of solace and peace was always the barn. There was something very soothing about being there and being around such calm, accepting. I mean, horses have a way of accepting you unconditionally, you know, much like dogs do. And so it was very therapeutic for me to have that safe place, both physically and emotionally, to go to when I was in my teens and early adulthood.
And was that barn on your own property at your house, or did you have to go to the barn?
Yeah, no, funny story. So when my dad agreed to buy me a horse, his conditions were that if I found the horse and the barn and it was within bike riding distance, so he didn't have to get me there, that it was something he could afford. But what he didn't know is that I had been scoping out the local horse community for years on my bike, and I already had a horse and a barn picked out. So yes, the barn was in bike riding distance, you know, just far enough away to get a physical distance from troubles at home, but not so far that I couldn't get back home in a hurry.
That's great. And it sounds like as soon as he outlined kind of what the conditions were for you to get a horse, you could immediately hand him a dossier of all the research you had already been doing.
Oh, I was like, check, check, check.
Yeah, I got that covered, Dad. Let's get the horse.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Dr. Edie Dopking, founder of Quantum Leap Farm in Odessa, Florida, which for more than 25 years has offered an array of equestrian therapy programs, helping clients ranging from children with special needs to veterans with PTSD. If you'd like to ask Dr. Dopking a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. And email DJ at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. So when did you kind of first realize that horses could assist healing people of various ages with various conditions?
So, you know, I had my own experiences in that way, and had a lot of friends that had similar experiences. You know, we all noticed the calming effect. And I think what's been, you know, demonstrated by a lot of research at this point is that a horse's calm presence when you're riding them, that rhythmic movement and, you know, just that peaceful outdoor setting can, you know, promote relaxation and lower anxiety. But I was lucky enough in the early 1990s to have a very good friend of mine introduce me to Bacchus Equestrian Center. They are part of Hillsborough County Parks and Recreation. And they had a program for children at that time, a therapeutic riding program for children at that time. And I started volunteering with them, and I was so impressed with what I saw there. I mean, it's that program is still running today, and it's an excellent program. I mean, you know, just anecdotally watching the outcomes of these kids with all kinds of disabilities, whether they were physical or emotional or intellectual, you know, they gained a real sense of accomplishment. There was, inclusivity, you know, and again, that non-judgmental acceptance that horses offer. You know, humans look at each other and we instantly see black, white, fat, skinny, rich, poor, ugly, pretty, you know, all these ways that we sort of subconsciously judge each other. And I don't think horses see any of that.
Fellow creature of some kind, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Unless you do something to give them a bad impression, but they start off on an even keel.
Oh, totally. You know, as prey animals, they are very sensitive to the way that you present yourself. And, you know, just from my experiences at Quantum, it's quite obvious that if a person has anxiety or sadness or anger, fear, they respond to all of those emotions. I've read that we produce a pheromone associated with all of our emotions, right? And horses have excellent sensory or a sense of smell, right? And that's helped them understand the creatures around them as prey animals. Are they friend? Are they foe? Are they aggressive? Are they sexually interested? You know, what's going on with this other animal in their environment so that they know how to react. And they respond to humans in much the same way. It's really interesting that they sort of adopt us once they know you and trust you. They sort of adopt us as one of their herd. And if you're upset about something or sad about something, I mean, you have to peel them off of you.
Well, that's really interesting, because one of the things I was going to get into later about some of the horses at Quantum Leap Farm, and maybe this is the time where we'll circle back to that later as well, but is it to a horse, basically, like instead of to a person, is it to a horse that they react that way, or are some horses just more attuned and empathetic the way humans vary in that same regard?
Sure, yeah, just like people, you know, horses have had unique a unique combination of life experiences, right, that produce the individual that they are today. If they've been mishandled or abused, they may have triggers just like humans do. If they've had a very loving, supportive upbringing, you know, they're pretty confident and open to new experiences and not particularly shy or spooky. They are naturally, like humans, have tendencies towards extroversion and introversion, or optimism and pessimism. You know, so yes, they are very much like humans. And, you know, part of the benefit is that because of all that, you use the same skills and strategies to befriend a horse that you would to befriend another human. So using them in mental health therapy is excellent to help people gain confidence in their relationship building skills.
So that they're kind of like the intermediary for people that are trying to learn how to do that. The horse is there and just makes people probably relax about if they're not confident or if they're insecure about a certain thing or just kind of finding their way. The horse probably helps them relax in that regard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then there's that non-judgmental factor, right? If you do something wrong, they're amazingly generous about moving past that moment and just, you know, we call it returning to grazing. They can be out in the pasture and something spooks them or scares them and, you know, they'll run off and then, you know, like literally 10 seconds later, it's like, oh, okay, live through that. I guess I'm going to eat now. You know, they tend to be very forgiving about that.
They don't keep score.
And they don't just ruminate on it like we do, right? Like we tend to have that, God, I wish I hadn't said that, or I wish I'd done this instead, or that kind. They don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, they just, you know, on to the next thing, right? Move on.
There's
some good mental health lessons there.
Yeah, we could learn quite a bit from horses if we're paying attention, which obviously you have been for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. So speaking of that, walk me through the initial concept. You were struck by the Bacchus program. So how did the initial thought of creating Quantum Leap Farm come together, influenced obviously by that, but still it's quite a thing to go, well, this program is really great, to then say, hey, I'm going to create my own program. Was it sort of an echo of that program, or did you have like similar ideas in mind but wanted to kind of focus it a different direction slightly, or?
I'm going to say yes and yes. I was curious about how Bacchus started, and I spoke to the fellow that was running that program at the time. His name is Pat Venetta, one of the best horsemen I've ever had the privilege to meet. Anyway, he is also a retired Navy SEAL. And, you know, I've got a soft spot for veterans. My dad fought in World War II. My husband's a veteran, Air Force. And I just have a big soft spot for them. So I was very interested in Pat and his background. And I said, so, you know, how come we're not really doing veterans here? And he said, well, our mission is kids. And, we are governed by Hillsborough County Commissioners. And he said, you know, it would probably take like a major change in our mission. And he said, I don't see that happening. So he said, the other thing is we are so busy with kids. I don't know where we'd fit them into our schedule.
Yeah.
And then he looked at me and he said, you know, you've got that nice little piece of property up there off of Crescent Road. He said, why don't you think about starting a program? And at the time I was fully employed and partners in an MRI business. And I thought, yeah, in my spare time, I'm going to do that, Pat.
Well, but it sounds like he was thinking kind of what you were thinking, just like how practical it was or how quickly it could be executed. But his light bulb moment and your light bulb moment almost kind of connected at the same moment.
Truly. I had become a Special Olympics coach, and Bacchus took all their riders to Special Olympics. And I mean, I just really dove in head first, and I just thought it was one of the best things I'd ever seen anybody do with horses. So, you know, I also had ambitions about going back to school and getting higher degrees, and ultimately got my PhD at USF in aging studies research, and my area of interest there was aging and disability, right? And halfway through my working on my PhD, the Iraq and Afghanistan wars started. And so I also started wondering, so how do these young men and women who get blown up in IED explosions, how do they go on to lead meaningful, purposeful, joyful lives? You know, so that was the focus of my study, was aging and disability. But, back to Pat, and by now it was the mid 90s, and he had sort of planted that little seed in my head, which found fertile soil there, of course. We sold the business that I was partners in. It was kind of a, we had a public company come along, and it wasn't exactly the golden parachute, but, you know, it was enough money that I felt like I could take a risk and start this program small, right? We started with three horses that I already owned.
Yeah.
And I figured I had enough money that I could carry it for the first 3 years or so. But after that, it was going to have to either sink or swim. Once we sold it, they didn't want us as part of the management team staying on very long. So I was out of a job and I had a little bit of money, and that combination is
sort of perfect in its own way.
Exactly. So I thought, this is an opportunity I might never have again. If I'm going to do it, this would probably be the time.
And so when you launched it in that very kind of modest way, was it veterans? Who were the first folks that were kind of served by your approach to equestrian therapy?
Yes. James Haley VA Hospital was one of our first referral sources. Because Bacchus was only doing children at that time, their program has evolved as well. Because Bacchus was only doing children at that time, I thought that we could, you know, fill a gap by serving adults and veterans with disabilities. So we served, you know, I had started school by this time, I had connections with Parkinson's support groups and multiple sclerosis support groups and stroke support groups. And so we did a lot of, we worked with a lot of adults with those types of conditions. And I had done some interning in the VA and met a bunch of the recreational therapists who just thought therapeutic riding was the cat's meow, right?
I'm sure.
And so they started referring brain injury patients and spinal cord injury patients, polytrauma patients, amputees. So we got very busy very quickly.
And could you accommodate that what sounds like a huge influx with those three horses and kind of what your plan to be a modest beginning, but it sounds like those plans had to be quickly revised.
Yeah. We quickly got more horses. The first 5 years, we tried to keep it small, just for financial reasons. Nonprofits undergo a period of review by the IRS. In your fifth year, they come back and they look at your books and they decide whether you're actually behaving like a nonprofit, or maybe you make too much on fees and you look more like a for-profit, or maybe too much of the support comes from family and you look more like a foundation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, larger donors know that, and they know that, you know, if you are found to be something other than a 501c3 charitable organization, that they might end up having to pay back taxes on monies that they've donated. So it's difficult in the first 5 years to get any large donations. So unfortunately, although we had really high demand in those, we always have, in those first 5 years, we were forced to keep it small until we could get more grants and more donors in the pipeline. And that, you know, that anybody that's been associated with a startup nonprofit understands how difficult that is initially.
For sure. Well, and also, one of the things we talk a lot about on this show, over the years at least, was that animal-related kind of nonprofits notoriously face monumental challenges in the realm of fundraising or just paying the bills. And, you know, I would think that the care and feeding of horses is obviously no cheap date. So it seemed like that would have been sort of a weird balancing act to not throw things out of whack with that IRS review coming, but still keep the money coming in that you could keep doing what you're doing, keep the horses fed, and obviously vet bills pop up when they do, and you just got to take care of that. And
You're right. It is a weird balancing act, you know, and that was probably the most intense time of struggle. And in about our sixth year, I read an article in the Chronicles of Philanthropy that said it's less than 5% of grassroots nonprofits that ever see their fifth year. So I was like, "Ooh, wow, okay, well, dodge that bullet."
Yeah, we turned that corner somehow, so that's great.
We have always been extremely lucky to have a lot of good community support, you know, Hillsborough County being one of them. They saw that we filled a gap that Bacchus didn't, and they were quick to jump in and help us out as well.
So that means you're getting grants as well as individual donations, or how do things work currently, or even since that five-year review?
Yeah. Well, I, you know, speaking of evolving, that, you know, those numbers evolve every year. Presently, we are about 36% grant funded and 41% special events. 17% is individual and corporate sponsors. And we only get like 6% from program revenue. And the reason for that is, you know, we almost half of, like, we saw upwards of 1,800 people this year. Wow. And over 600 of them were veterans and active duty military and their families, right? Those people have children with special needs as well. And so we get referrals from Tinker Elementary down at MacDill Air Force Base. But anyway, we have never charged a veteran and we will never charge a veteran. We feel like they've paid up front. And we offer scholarships for our civilian participants because many of them experience financial hardship. You can imagine if you have a disability that it affects your both your ability to work and your opportunities to find employment. I mean, if you need help toileting, it's hard to find an employer that's going to accommodate
that. Understanding about that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, a lot of them are on, have very low incomes and, you know, their families, you know, if you've got a child with pediatric cancer, imagine how much of the family's resources get poured into that child's well-being. We've never really wanted inability to pay to be a barrier to receiving services. So,
for sure.
The majority of the money we raise is to support services for people who could not otherwise afford to be there.
And in that, the way you kind of divvied up the percentages there, when you say 41% of special events, tell me what a special event is or what constitutes a special event for that portion, sizable portion of what the monies are.
Yeah, I am so glad you asked that, Duncan.
Okay, great. we aim to please.
Yeah. I smell an opportunity there. So we have three events a year. We have one in March called Stirrup Hope, and it's a big gala, and we do it at the farm. And it's essentially a cowboy ball, right? Everybody comes dressed in their finest cowboy boots and dressy jeans and cowboy hats and all that kind of thing. So you can skip the stilettos and the tuxes and that kind of thing and just come, you know, casual. But in every other sense, it is very much a gala. We have a sit-down dinner. We have a presentation. People get to walk the farm. There's plenty of photo opportunities with our therapy horses. There's usually a theme to it, usually a song or a movie that in some way reflects the experience of our participants. One year we did The Greatest Showman. It's been so fun.
That sounds great, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's really a lot of fun. In the fall, coming up, we have a luncheon called Colors of Courage, and we sort of bring the farm to downtown Tampa. It's a luncheon. There are impactful presentations by some of our participants, and they talk about, you know, their life experiences and how their experiences at the farm with our horses. And, you know, by the way, we have a professional staff. We have a licensed and certified mental health counselor. We have a licensed and certified physical therapist and occupational therapist there presently and have had a speech therapist in the past. But, you know, we wanted to make sure that the people with their hands on these vulnerable populations have the expertise and the experience to truly make their experience therapeutic.
Sure.
Anyway, back to the fundraisers. It's an hour long, this Colors of Courage luncheon. It is open to the public. You can register online at www.quantumleapfarm. And it's just a really nice overview of the programs and the benefits that the participants experience. I'd love to encourage anyone to come that would like to come. There is no charge for that event. We just make an ask at the end of the presentations and we hope people will give, and typically they do.
And by the way, this is a fundraiser, folks, so we are asking something. There is such a thing as a free lunch, but up to a point, I guess, is what your message is, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We hope people will be so moved by the presentation that they will be happy to give and support ongoing programs.
For sure.
And then we have a third event that's a golf tournament. This year, we're going to be having it at the Pelican Golf Course. And we are currently looking for sponsors for that event. It's our oldest fundraiser. This is our 26th year wow. of doing this particular golf tournament, and it is a lot of fun. We have a couple of online fundraisers during the year, too. In the month of May, we have an online, I'll say, horse adoption in quotation marks. You know, we have individuals and corporations that will sponsor a particular horse. Their veterinary expenses, their hay, feed, care, horseshoeing, all of those types of expenses that come along with owning horses. And they help us assuage those costs quite sure. a bit. And then in the winter, we have a year-end ask. And there's usually a participant story associated with that one. And it's also to raise funds for supporting all of our different programs and awesome. And the folks that can't afford to participate if they didn't have scholarship.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like collectively those things are working well and very successful, and especially 25 years into the golf tournament, I guess you kind of know how to do that pretty well. So.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's, you know, we keep tweaking and we keep learning and we keep improving all of them, you know, based on our attendees' feedback.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's they're a lot of fun. We have fun doing them, too.
That's great. Well, again, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with Dr. Edie Dopking, founder of Quantum Leap Farm in Odessa, Florida, which for a quarter century has offered an array of equestrian therapy programs, helping clients of all ages who experience a wide range of conditions. You're invited to join the conversation. Please call 813-239-9663. Email dj at wnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So before we run out of time, because we are kind of nearing the end of our time here, Dr. Dopking, I really want to talk about kind of what goes on in terms of the actual healing and stuff. Because I've long thought horses are magical in all kinds of ways, including the way they appear to be able to help people with various affliction, which obviously is what goes on at Quantum Leap Farm. So given your years of directly working with and observing horses and Quantum Leap clients, I'd kind of like to ask about a handful of conditions and how, at least in broad strokes, the horse interaction helps that particular condition. For example, a child on the autistic spectrum.
Yes. So, you know, typically kids on the autism spectrum are physically quite able, right? Not many of them have physical disability as well. So for those kids, primarily, it's emotional regulation. Horses mirror human emotion and provide immediate, that non-judgmental feedback that helps people recognize and manage their feelings. Also, you know, there's this immediate feedback, right? That, like, if you do something wrong, a lot of times a person will let you off the hook. But horses have this immediate feedback, and they'll let you know, you know. So it's, you can adjust your behavior accordingly to gain the horse's cooperation. And, you know, it's not personal. They don't, you know.
We've established they're not judgmental and they're not keeping score. They're just reacting to what happened at that moment.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have the opportunity to learn and adjust. Also, there's, you know, a lot of trust that forms. And I think also that kids on the autism spectrum spend a lot of time overstimulated, right? We're always looking for a response from them. We'll say, how do you feel about so-and-so? Or what would you like to do next? And you know, they're trying to get themselves organized cognitively and respond, you know, correctly, or appropriately to those cues, and it takes a minute. And we just tend to, you know, as humans, we're like, so what do you think, huh? What? You know, and like we keep badgering them, not realizing that, you know, they're trying to respond. Horses do not do that. They will, in their way, ask a question, and then they just wait patiently
yeah.
for your response. And it gives an autistic child the time to respond appropriately. They don't feel that pressure. So they build a lot of confidence. They have that sense of accomplishment, you know, and there's that connection, you know, deep bonds can form between horses and humans, and just, you know, they fulfill those basic needs for that trust, affection, and acceptance.
Well, that sounds good. I'm going to ask you at least one more before we run out of time here, but I just want to read an email that came in just a moment ago. It says, in her autobiography, Broken Horses, Brandi Carlile credits the quote-unquote throwaway horses in her life to helping her survive a very difficult childhood. Audiobook is excellent. She reads her own story. So I just thought I'd add that to the conversation. Thanks to the listener who emailed that in. So I guess sort of natural in our remaining moments that I ask one more, I guess, if it's all I'm gonna, maybe we have time for, as a veteran with PTSD, what happens typically in interaction with the horse that helps with the healing of that person?
Yes. So as you know, PTSD is a complex diagnosis, and everyone has their different triggers. And, you know, horses are big and warm and typically calm, and their heartbeat is slower than ours. And, you know, we get around them and we tend to modulate ourselves to fit right into that. So there's this immediate calming effect. And we, in our mental health program, you know, we utilize a lot of obstacle courses, and it provides an opportunity for veterans with PTSD to use their problem-solving skills and their coping skills. Sometimes they get frustrated, and, you know, all of those things are on display in the arena, and the horses react to that, and they get that immediate feedback onto how their responses to frustration and anxiety might affect other people if they're affecting horses this way. So again, there's an emotionally safe space in which to try different strategies, you know, in coping with an anxiety producing moment.
Okay.
So they too are able to learn and adjust their behavior, and the horse is an immediate reflection of, you know, whether that was a good adjustment or an okay adjustment or a not so great adjustment.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting, and it sounds like it really works well for them, and that's obviously was a focus early on and from when you first launched Quantum
yes.
Informed. So, unfortunately, we're at the end of our time. We got so many other things I was hoping to discuss with you, so we're going to have to do this again much sooner than the last time. It was like 15-year gap. I think we'll have to do it much sooner to get to some of the stuff, including just quickly want to say, you're always looking for volunteers at Quantum Leap Farm, if I'm not mistaken. So I guess
absolutely.
The website to check that out and look into how to do that would be quantumleapfarm.org. Correct?
Yes, that's right. Cool. That's right. Yes, we depend highly on our volunteers. We still have a small staff, and we would not be able to do all the things that we do without our volunteers. We're so thankful to the community for stepping up and helping us out in that way.
All right. Well, I've been speaking with Dr. Edie Dopkin, founder of Quantum Leap Farm in Odessa, Florida, and we already noted the website, but we'll note it one more time. It's quantumleapfarm.org. You can find out more about what we talked about and what we didn't get a chance to talk about, including opportunities to volunteer. So thank you so much for joining us again on Talking Animals, Dr. Dopkin. And we'll try to do this again to cover more ground than we got to cover today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure, Duncan, and I'd love to do it again.
Great. Thank you so much. Take care.
You too.
In a moment, I'll speak with Laura Weiss of Florida Voices for Animals about a multi-day protest of Loomis Brothers Circus. The stint is coming up at Robarts Arena in Sarasota starting July 31st, and the related effort to persuade Loomis Brothers to stop using the elephant Oka and other animals in their circus. More on this in a moment when Laura joins us on Talking Animals on WNF. Right now we're going to step into the comedy corner with, of course, a piece of animal-oriented comedy. This one's from the marvelous Gary Goldman, and it's called Walrus in today's comedy corner on Talking Animals on WNF.
I watch an animal show. I don't care. Watched a great documentary about the walrus. What a great animal the walrus is. I love it. It's got flippers, tusks, a mustache. It looks like something God built last minute. You know, like God was up late on the sixth day, exhausted. It's just, this is due tomorrow? I'm feeling very creative. Can I just put together some of my earlier work? Do a best of? How would that be? Do a God's greatest hits? Yeah, that'll be good. I'll put together the seal, the elephant, and Burt Reynolds. Why the mustache? That's what I love on the walrus, the mustache. Like my eighth grade science teacher, Mr. Gibley, he told us that a lot of animals, they adapt certain features to fit in with their environment. What environment did the walrus find himself in where he's like, shit, I need a mustache. If I'm gonna fit in here, I'm gonna need to rock a stash for a while. You know? What was he, a 70s porn star? Needs by...
That was Gary Goldman in today's Comedy Corner with a piece called Walrus, taken, or at least part of a piece called Walrus, taken from his album Conversations with Inanimate Objects. Now it's time to talk with Laura Weiss of Florida Voices for Animals about the protest coming up at the end of the month. And we're not done with circus protests, let's put it that way, and we got a definite agenda here that we want to pursue. We'll find out that from Laura. So let's welcome Laura Weiss to Talking Animals on WNF. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I love your show.
Oh, thanks so much. I appreciate that, and great to have you here to talk about this. So, through years of protests and other actions, the Ringling Brothers finally removed elephants and other animals from their circus. So I think a lot of people, just because they're so high profile and have been for so many generations, probably thought problem solved. But it's not quite that simple, as we're about to hear. So to talk a little bit about the Loomis Brothers Circus and kind of what's coming up at the end of the month.
Alrighty. I'd like to share with our viewers about the event coming up. We would like, if anybody can join Florida Voices for Animals and local PETA supporters, to urge Loomis Brothers to keep all the animals out of their circus act. We want them to free Oka. Oka is an Asian elephant about 56 years old, captured from the wild in India as a baby. Oka's handler, Brian Franzen, retired two other elephants, sparing them the constant travel abuse and confinement of life in the circus, but Oka was left behind. Oka deserves to be freed from her more than five decades of cruel circus captivity. Like you said, Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus returned the circus to only using human participants and willing human participants, and it's time for Loomis Brothers to follow suit. The details are starting Friday, July 31st from 6:30 to 8, and then basically there'll be three shows on Saturday and two shows on Sunday, and we'll have the details. All you have to do is click on to Florida Voices for Animals, and we'll have all the show dates. And where it's going to be is Robarts Arena at Sarasota Fairgrounds, 3000 Ringling Boulevard. And all the materials, such as posters and leaflets, will be provided. Please refrain from bringing dogs. There might not be a comfortable place for them to lie down during the protest. So this is a protest. Outreach events are a fun and effective way to help animals and meet local advocates. So be sure to invite others. Animals kept in captivity and used for human entertainment are denied everything natural that they would experience if they were out in the wild and with their families. So they don't want to be performing in circuses and jumping through hoops and standing on pedestals for our entertainment.
Well said. Well, that's very good. And it sounds like The idea is to encourage people to join you. You guys are already got this set up that you're going to be there protesting at the Loomis Brothers thing. But it's very simple to for people who want to participate. It sounds like you provide everything they need, signs and information. And so people just kind of show up. Do people need to let you know they're coming at all, or they just turn up at whatever performance or performances they want to participate in the protest?
Well, it's always helpful to know who's coming and when, but it's not necessary. If you can gather some friends and just come on over, that would be great. We have all the signs available. If you want to make your own, that's nice, too. But we do have it posted on the Florida Voices for Animals, the event. And as you say, you're coming. It's like I said, it's always nice to know. I do believe there'll be media there, and we're going to have this big blow-up elephant of Oka, and try to draw attention. And we've had this in Tampa, and it worked out really well. So we're going to be doing the same thing in Sarasota, and I think that would be it for our area of Florida. So basically, we just want to let Loomis know, the last of all the circuses, that we are not having it. We don't want animals in their circus acts, and we want them to free Oka.
And as we know, sometimes it takes a while, but these things do work. They are effective. Again, looking at Ringling Brothers as a textbook example. So exactly. We really want to get out there July 31st, August 1st, and August 2nd. And again, you go to floridavoicesforanimals.org, right? I think is the full website.
Yeah, or you go on Facebook. It'll be on the Facebook.
Yes, just search for Florida Voices for Animals one way or the other and get the details. And you can also let people know you're coming, as Laura says, would be very helpful to know. But it's well done and a very helpful thing to do, and it does seem to have an impact. Sometimes it takes a while, but it does have an impact, as we know from the Ringling Brothers example. So thanks for joining us, and thanks for spearheading this effort, Laura.
Well, thank you for having me, Duncan. Have a great day.
All right, you too. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Coming up on WNF, it's The Conversation, the great show hosted by Mario Nunez and Joe King Carter. After that, it's The Scoop, WNF's brief news recap. But then we shift back to music programming following in the morning of the inimitable Izzy K. We got Sam Vaughn holding forth from 1 to 3. And I'm not sure exactly who. Someone will be in filling in for Nancy C as she's away for the summer, as is often the case. So somebody will be hosting the traffic jam for her from 3 to 6 p.m. and things just continue in grand fashion here on 88.5 WMNF. Meanwhile, as on this show at the moment, as a prize for Name That Animal Tune, we'll dig out some kind of talking animals trinket and first person correctly identifies by calling 813-239-9663 this animal song. It's an animal tune on Talking Animals. Take any guesses you might have for that naming that animal tune off the air, because we have reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Next week's show, Lori Sumier, director of Paradise Lost, a hybrid, kind of very interesting animated live-action hybrid documentary chronicling the plight of the Palea, a small yellow bird found only on the Mauna Kea volcano in Hawaii, one of the rarest birds in the world. Chronicles that whole story. It's really interesting. So we'll discuss that with Lori next week on Talking Animals.